Hey, this is your host Shane with another exciting episode of Radical Rocks. Today we're going to go in depth on how to be a rock hound, how to go rock hounding, how to start rock hounding. So stay tuned.
On the first part of the journey, I was looking at radical rocks. There were fossils, minerals, and rocks and things. There were sand, and hills, and rings. The first thing I found was a geode, crystals, quartz with no clouds. Agate was hot and the ground was hard, but the gems were there to be found. See, I've been through the desert, found a rock with no name. Felt good to have in my hand. In the desert, you can find lots of rocks, 'cause radical rocks are everywhere.
That's right, radical rocks are everywhere, and this week we are going to talk about rock hounding. We've tried to change our format a little bit, so we are going to have one main subject. Sometimes we will have a variety of topics at the end of the main subject, but we're going to try doing our episode from one main subject. If you would like to get in on the conversation more, we have a big presence on MeWe. You go to MeWe and you look up the group Radical Rocks. We're there. Also, we have YouTube videos, and I'll try to work on some of the other social media links because I'm not quite sure how they're all set up right now, but I need to review that. And also, what else? I was going to tell you something else, but I can't think of it. So let's get right into it. Today, I want to welcome you to the Radical Rocks podcast, where we explore the fascinating world of rock hounding. Again, I'm your host, Shane. In today's episode, we're going to start to discuss all about rock hounding, whether you're a beginner or whether you're looking to maybe add something to your already started rock hounding journey and experience. So this episode is for you, and we're going to dive right in. Now, before we begin, let's clarify what rock hounding is. Rock hounding is the exciting hobby of exploring the outdoors, searching for rocks, minerals, gemstones, fossils, and other geological treasures. It's a wonderful way to connect with nature and unravel Earth's history and build a remarkable collection of natural wonders from the Earth's rocks and minerals and even fossils. Quite popular in the 50s, 60s, and 1970s, families and individuals have been rock hounding in the United States. Recently, in the last decade, rock hounding and lapidary has made a sizable comeback in the United States of America. A lot of the rocks that people are collecting are from shows which come from other countries outside of the United States and some from within the United States. Now, aside just from collecting at those type of shows, we're going to talk about a lot of the details of rock hounding, the hobby of collecting rocks and minerals, because this can be very exciting and rewarding activity, and I've got a lot of tips for you today to get started. So let's go. First, one of the things you're going to want to do is research and education. Before you delve into the world of rocks and minerals, you want to educate yourself about the different types of geological formations. We've had a lot of videos and podcasts on geological formations and the types of rocks that can be found in these different types of geological formations. So research your area. See if there's anything interesting. The tools that are necessary for rock hounding, the basics, books, online resources, and one that I always recommend in our podcast is joining a local rock hounding club, which these individuals are glad to share with you and provide valuable insights and knowledge. And we're going to go over this, some of these subjects in detail, so stay tuned. Step 2, selecting your tools. To start rock hounding, you're going to need a few basic essential tools. A geologist's hammer, which is flat and blunt on one side and has sort of a pick on the other. Chisels, hand lens, this is to magnify, like a magnifying glass. Safety goggles that are definitely not going to break if a rock chip comes flying at you when you're breaking rocks apart. Gloves, good footwear are the must-haves. As you progress, you can invest in a rock pick, screen. I would also recommend books on finding rocks and also guides for identifying rocks in the field. Some of the other tools and equipment that you might want are, again, the hammer, the chisel, the safety goggles, the gloves. A backpack can be good, and we'll talk more about some of this stuff as well. Step 3, locating the sites. You can research these sites in your area. There's different ways to do that. We'll talk about that. National parks, public lands, be careful. Make sure that you're allowed to collect there. Designated rock hounding sites are also an excellent place to begin. There's rock hounding parks around the United States and in different countries, so you can get online and do the research. Consult geological maps. If you can find those in America, we have the Geological Survey, and we have topographical maps that sometimes show what types of rocks are in different areas. And I've had videos on that, and we've talked about that in some podcasts as well. And there's a lot of research you can do on the internet too. We'll talk more about that too. And again, that identification book to be able to identify your rocks and minerals can be of help. It can be confusing too. Step 3, got to find those sites. Okay, so we've got the research material, but now we're going to find the sites. Maybe a rock hounding club in your area has trips in nearby areas, things like that, that you can go to as well. So we'll talk more about that, how you can get tied into that, how you can get connected. Step 4, field work and safety. So we got to be safe. We got to ensure that we're prepared for the areas that we go into. There are safety precautions. You need to dress appropriately for weather and be ready for a weather change. Weather changes can kill people. You could get lost. Do you have enough water, snacks, things like that that you can carry? Make sure to let somebody know when you're going, where you're going, and when you're going to return. And check, you know, if you have a cell phone, check your cell phone before you go out there. And leave them a text and let them know what time they should be hearing a text back from you. You can never be too safe. Too often we see on the news, people who are even experienced get lost in a wilderness or in a desert ravine because everything starts to look the same. And I met some people who've gotten lost and almost nearly froze to death up in the mountains. It got quite cold at night. The temperature dropped some 40 degrees. So these are things you should be very aware of. Also your surroundings. You know, there's spiders, snakes, bears, lions, other animals that might be in your region that you need to be aware of and look out for. Sharp rocks, roads and paths that are unstable, poisonous plants, things of this sort. You need to be aware of what the dangers are in your area. Step 5, you need to have techniques and types of observation. Because you're on the rock hound site now, you've got your tools, you need them to examine the site. You can scratch the ground, you can scan the ground, you can chip a corner off of a rock. You're looking for something different, rocks, minerals, or fossils. Look for the exposed rock faces, stream beds are good areas, areas where erosion might have revealed something that could have been hidden just a few weeks or years before. Use your magnifying glass, your hands lens to inspect these samples closely and look at the color, the texture. Look for visible crystals or potential fossils. 6, documentation and preservation. very important to document your findings. I didn't do this a lot at first because I thought, oh, I know where it's at. I'll remember. And you want to take photos, make sketches, make records of the location. If you have Google Earth or a GPS system where you can get the coordinates, the range, and the longitude and latitude, you can mark the spot pretty closely with that, but you have to put it somewhere where you can find it. So I would say keep it in two places, keep notes, and then put notes on your specimens, with your specimens, because you may want to go back to that area at some other point. The other thing you want to do is preserve the environment that you're in. You know, try to leave it like you found it. Try not to disturb natural habitats. I know people see tortoises out in the desert. It's been recommended that it's been said that if you touch them, that they can actually die. There are plants that are part of their ecosystem, part of their habitat. So, you know, don't roll giant boulders down just to roll giant boulders down. You could be creating damage to natural habitats and landmarks. So be careful, be considerate, pack out more than you pack in when it comes to trash. Okay, now for your specimens, step 7, cleaning and identification. Once you've collected some samples, it's time to clean and identify them. You can use water, brushes. I always bring a spray bottle, and I use the spray bottle to help identify minerals. It's a tool that I don't like to leave without. You can refer to your field guide or go home and look at the online resources. Consult with experts. You know, if you post a really good picture and try to find out some information on your mineral specimen or your rock specimen, find out how hard, what the hardness is on it. We'll talk more about hardness. We've done whole videos and podcasts on hardness testing. I've got a whole video on YouTube under Radical Rocks, how you can do a hardness test. It's very simple. It really helps narrow down identifying something. And when you post it on a website, that can help a person a lot in helping you identify it. Remember, proper identification enhances your understanding and appreciation of each one of your finds. So when somebody goes, oh, that's really cool, and you go, yeah, I found it out in the desert somewhere, because you're really not telling them a lot of the story. You know, you're missing a lot of valuable information. And if you're talking to a fellow rock hound, you're hardly not telling them anything, right? They want to know all about it. All right, 7. We covered that. 8, building your collection. As you continue your rock hounding journey, your collection will grow. You might want to display your specimens in a showcase. It could be in a cabinet, but you want to do it in such a way that it showcases their beauty and uniqueness. Some rock hounders create labeled trays. There's also shadow boxes. Also, there's making jewelry, which is known as lapidary. Lapidary is the art of taking the gemstone material and polishing it. This can include silversmithing, goldsmithing, wire wrapping, and other things used to enhance the lapidary material. Rocks, we call a semi-precious rocks or common rocks that will take a polish. All right. Also, some of them might look good out in the garden too. So preserve and display your collection. Clean your rocks and minerals using the appropriate methods. I have a blog at Blogspot. I think it's .com. And I have a whole thing on how to clean different types of rocks and minerals. You can look up that. Also, I've done some podcasts on how to clean different rocks and minerals and gemstones. So usually water, if you find it out in the open, unless it's like a salt, a halite, or from some sort of chlorite mineral, you know, like from Boron, California, where they make borax and stuff like that, most of those that are not like that, you know, like jade and jasper and agate and calcite and many other gemstones and rocks, can be safely cleaned with just a little soap and water. Okay, and you usually are all right. So showcase your gems. You can even do a little rock garden, a zen garden, all of those things. So that's kind of like the basics. Now, in the basics, just remember to enjoy your time out there. It's not about how many rocks you find. It's not about what you bring out of there, although that can be nice. It's about the experience that you have out there. Take safety precautions, respect the environment and the other inhabitants that are there, and have fun discovering the wonders of rocks and minerals. Now, in addition to that, I want to give you some more in-depth details on rock hounding and being a rock hound. Let me get my notes here. And here we go. So, again, some of this is a little repetitive, but there's more information here that I want to go over the basics. And then for those that are more experienced, maybe want to hear a little bit more, maybe you've gone rock hounding a time or two, maybe there's something you could pick up in this part. So, rock hounding, we are very intrigued with rock hounding. It becomes an obsession. So, we're gobbling up all the information we can on this. We probably forgot, those that have been doing it for 10, 20, 30 plus years, we've probably forgotten more than we know, and we know a lot. Most of us do. So information is king, and remembering the important stuff or the stuff that you like the most is valuable. Safety, of course, is super valuable. So I want to give you more information in preparing for your rock hounding trip, whether you be a newbie or someone more experienced. I want to talk more about research, equipment, and basic rules that might be valuable as you embark on your rock hounding adventure. Now, there are ways that you can find more rock hounding equipment. You can go on Amazon, or you can go on eBay, or you can go to rock shops. There's also gold mining shops. They're online. There may be some in your town. So look these up. Now, rock hounding, just to reiterate, this is a hobby of hunting for minerals, rocks, crystals, gemstones, and it is getting somewhat more popular lately. It was hugely popular back before and a little after the 1960s. Now, there are jewelry makers, who are people who just make jewelry. They don't collect the rocks. These are people who are interested in gemstones and rocks. Now, you could become a jewelry maker. Some jewelry makers are also rock hounds. But this is another avenue for your hobby, where you could use some of these rocks and gemstones as jewelry or other useful items. So whether you want to make jewelry out of them or polish them or just have a nice rock on the counter or by your door or in the garden or on the patio, it's all good. It's all wonderful. So, what do you need to know when you get started? Some of the basic things, we talked about research. A lot of research. I talk about research all the time. I do research for you on many rocks and minerals. And I try to put in a format where you can listen to it while you're driving or while you're doing something that would pique your interest, give you some ideas, and some education. So first thing I would say is, are there any rock and mineral clubs nearby? This is key, guys. I just joined a local club up here. It was only $10 for me and $1 each for my children under 12. I mean, $12, right? I get their newsletter. I'm helping contribute toward their club. I can go to their events and meet with people who've been collecting rocks for decades and decades. Find out more about the local history of this area. Some of them even open up their shops to use their equipment. Very kind people, for the most part, in these clubs and groups, because it takes that volunteer spirit to run a club like that. They're all nonprofit that I know of, and it's very affordable. Anything that you do is minimally priced, whether you buy saw oil or you get a class or whatever. It's just for them to try to keep the funds up to keep their club going. It's not about making a profit. I guarantee you that. Also, these folks can help you identify the best rock hounding areas in your region. We'll talk about other ways how you can do that in a minute. And the other thing you want to know is what rocks are available in your area. So, if you know those things, it's great. If you don't, we'll talk more about research on that. So, let's plan the location. Let me get a quick swig of coffee here. We want to find the location. We're new, or we want to start with areas that are probably close by, as close as possible. I was in Hawaii for a while. I found places where you could get rocks and minerals on Maui, on Oahu, on the Big Island, Hawaii, on Kauai. I found them. There, you look them up. They're maybe not spectacular. Maybe they're not, you know, the beautiful agate that you want, but there are gemstones there. There's minerals. There's collectible shells, things like that. I do hear you have to be careful taking rocks from Hawaii. You don't want to get cursed. But if you live in Hawaii, you're not taking them. So that's one idea. I live in North Idaho, and there's not a lot of lapidary material here, but I found other things that I can do. There's gold mining. There's minerals. I found garnets up here. There's fossils nearby. Right across from me is Montana, where there's sapphires and different gemstones. So there's all kinds of things available locally, usually where you're at, within a few hours if you're in the United States. Now, I can't speak for every country, but when I pull up the map and I do my podcast and I highlight different minerals or gemstones or semi-precious stones, we find them all over the world, all over the world. So if you have the ability to do a little travel, you will be able to go to these places. So you can do many different areas for rock hounding in the United States primarily. Get better information on locations that you'd like to collect that are nearby, whether it be a city or a state. You can look up, just type in rock hounding spots and write your county, or the county next to that, or for the whole state. You can rock hound on public land in BLM land. Most areas are open to some type of collecting. Now, some national parks and reserves could be restricted, so you have to call the proper office and find out. Also, private land. Some people have private land. They might let someone collect there. Usually, these are pay-to-dig sites. The good thing about pay-to-dig sites is they want you to tell other people you know that are rock hounds and that there's minerals to be found there. So they make it where you should be able to succeed, at least at some level, to get some of these gemstones or minerals or what have you, at their property. So again, private property, you can only access this with the owner's permission. This does happen from time to time. Usually the rock hounding clubs are better at negotiating this, because they can offer a waiver, and they can offer that they have an insurance policy that covers them from injuries and damage and things like that. This protects the homeowner, the landowner, from lawsuits, and makes it more likely that they would grant permission for you to come onto their claim or their property. So, very nice. Very nice. Pay-to-dig sites are great for beginners as well, so keep that in mind. Great for kids, usually. I recommend using official state rocks, minerals, and gemstones of your state. to find some of the things, some available ones, be a good start. Usually these can be found pretty readily. And sometimes they're a very rare gemstone that is a state gemstone, but usually the rocks and minerals are not as rare and can be usually found. So you've got three different opportunities: rocks, minerals, gemstones, and some states even have fossils. You're not allowed to usually take fossils in the USA unless they are like sea creatures. And I'm talking about maybe fish castings and crabs and, the little sea creatures, not mammals, typically not mammals, like whales and dinosaurs and things like that. Usually, unless it's on a private land, you could get in a lot of trouble collecting a triceratop or a T-Rex or something like that. So be very careful. The other thing, too, is just the names of certain mountains and places can be an indication that there might be some minerals or some sort of gemstone. If you hear a place called Mineral Mountain, probably some minerals there. You hear a place called Jade Peak, probably, maybe, possibly some jade there. Do a little more research on the internet. Go to mindat.org, mindat.org, and research the area. You can look for rocks and minerals that are in certain areas. Very handy tool. It's free, and I recommend you use it. So use the internet. Books and magazines, these are wonderful. I saw a bunch of old magazines from the 1970s at the... I went to a rock show on Saturday over... it's the North Idaho Mineral Club, and it was at the fairgrounds in Kootenai, Idaho. And I wished I would have had the room to keep them, because there's some of those from the 70s and those areas, you know, probably... some of that stuff is thought to be closed or run out of material or whatever. And I know that even if an area is closed off, you can look around that area to other areas, maybe culverts and gutters or road cuts and things like that, where you're on the city property or the county property and not private property. And there's always a possibility you could find something from an area that's even closed off by looking around the edges of areas that are not closed off. So just be sure to follow all the rules. But I've done this a bunch of times. So books, magazines, the library, online. You can get books online, eBay. I usually buy pretty much everything on eBay now, and support my favorite sellers that way. So that's one way to do it. Rockin' Gym Magazine, again, they have not sponsored my show. They should. I always speak very highly of the magazine. If you're a rock hound and you want to be a rock hound and you can afford $20-$30 a year for the subscription, whatever it is, you should get it. It keeps a steady flow of information coming into your mailbox. It's healthier to read from print than it is from a computer all the time. And you can use it as a reference. It has nice pictures. They do a very good job. And it helps you think outside the box on a lot of things. They have techniques for shops, for shop talk, and for grinding and polishing stones. They have locations and minerals that are from around the world, and stories of people who have gone on trips and things like that. So really a great, great one that you should have. Other books are very good. I'm not going to name them all right now, but you want a field guide for identifying rocks and minerals. I've done a lot of podcasts and a couple of videos on how to identify rocks. So go look at that, and I'll give you a good list of books there as well. How do you find these rock clubs and these mineral clubs, these lapidary clubs? Well, I'm going to tell you, you're going to meet some great people. I've been a member of Orange Belt Mineralogical Society for a long time. I'm friends with many of the rock clubs throughout Southern California, all the way up to Bakersfield, and now in Idaho as well. These people are, like I said, they're volunteering to do something that they love. They love sharing. They often go out, and they're very kind to children, giving free rocks often to children, free education, free coloring, free classes. But they're an excellent resource for adults as well. They've been there. They've done that. They know where to go. They know how to polish that particular rock. That rock, you don't know what it is. They know what it is, or they know somebody who does. Okay, you can look this up at the American Federation of Mineralogical Societies. That's a good place to look for rock clubs in your area. And hopefully you can find one in your area. Okay. And if you are going to go on a trip that a rock hounding group is kind of, you know, announcing or advertising, I guess you could say, and it's not your club, for goodness sakes, buy a year's membership from them for $20 or whatever it is to thank them for the time that they spent showing you that location, being there for you, pointing out how to find that rock or gemstone, showing you how to spray water on it, or how to chip the corner, or how to tell it from a rock that we call leverite, leverite there. Thank those people and contribute to their club. Don't just go and leave. Give back, okay? Because these little clubs need our help so that they're there for future generations. All right. Other valuable sources of information. If there's a rock and gem and mineral show in your area, these can be really good. Now, some of them I will talk pretty badly about, and they're the ones that just have beads and jewelry. And they're fine. They are what they are. But from a rock hound perspective, they're a waste of time. I don't want that stuff. I don't need that stuff. I know how to get those things already. I want rough rocks. I want, display pieces. I want agates. I want, loose cut gemstones, perhaps. I want silversmithing supplies. I want rock shop supplies. I want to see those kind of people. I want to see people selling used equipment, new equipment. I want to see people selling rough rock. I want to see people selling slabs. This is where you take a rock and you cut it into slices about, quarter of an inch thick. Okay? And it's ready for me to take home to my cabbing machine and make into some gemstones, some cabochons. So that's a great resource, mineral shows. The ones that are given by the rock clubs are the best. Go to those. I just went to one last weekend from North Idaho Mineral Club. It was a fairly decent one. There was people there with slabs and rocks. And yeah, there was beads there too. That's fine. There's a variety. But if I buy beads, I'll be buying them from one of those type of shows, not from a so-called gem show that is just all polished and nothing rough at all. We call rough unpolished. That can be just rocks that are collected, or geodes that are uncut, or even slabs that are cut up in slices, ready for you to finish into beautiful polished cabochons. Rock shops are wonderful. When you go on a trip, do the research. Find out where the local rock shops are along the way. Take the time to go stop and see them. A lot of these folks are old timers, have been collecting rocks for a long, long time. They got a lot of wonderful stories. I drove through the state of Idaho, and in the south part of the state, hundreds and hundreds of miles from where I'm at right now, I met a wonderful man. He's no longer with us. That had a rock shop for a long, long time. And the stories he told and the education I got from some of the Idaho minerals that I wasn't familiar with, such as Idaho opal and other types of Idaho agates, was invaluable. And I will never forget the time I spent with him. Another time I was out in Blythe, and I went to a little rock shop out there. I ended up spending a few hundred dollars on rocks. My wife went with me. We had a wonderful time talking with the gentleman. It was an education I'll never forget. This is a wonderful resource for you. Most of these rock shops, again, these are specialized people. And some rock shops are filled with salesmen. If you've got a lot of cut, polished rocks and they don't have rough, it's just like the gym shows. If they're just selling everything's polished and there's a, you know, high price specimens in a cabinet, you know, it may not be quite what I'm describing, but we're talking about rock shops where they've got piles of rough rocks out in the yard and, you know, it might be fenced off or whatever. And they've got boxes and boxes of uncut rocks and slabs. This is the type of rock shop that I'm talking about. Okay. And I have been to some rock shops, one in Upland, California, where he had a little bit of that in the back, and he had the polished stuff in the front because it sells, and he needs to make a living. So that's fine, too. Totally respect that. So there's state natural resource agencies. You know, you can go on the BLM site and look up rocks and minerals in different states. And another great way to find your local rocks and minerals is museum. I've done this in a couple areas I've been at. I haven't done it here, but I'd love to. You go to the museum, and if they have a mineral specimens, they're usually always going to have a great section on the state gems and minerals, or maybe even the county or the local areas. So bring a camera and bring a notebook and take some notes, because they'll give you the area, they'll give you the mineral. You go home, do a little more research, and find out what areas or fringe areas that you can check. And if you work hard and you go on these trips and do this, you'll find something. Now, I've got a video where we went looking for some nice gemstones, and we didn't find them. But we found all kinds of other neat things. And that video, a lot of people loved it. They were like, wow, you know, I didn't know there was so many different kinds of rocks and formations up there in that little mountain that I've hiked around on. So you never know what you'll see. It may not be something you want to dig up and take home necessarily, but it might be a memory or an education in itself. Local universities can be a good source. A lot of them, especially state universities, can have some mineral displays in the geology department. I did work at a state university, and they had wonderful three-dimensional maps. I mean, they're literally three-dimensional maps. Awesome. They had all sorts of mineral specimens, and, you know, surprising. Some of the things you see, you're like, really, that's over in those hills? Well, I would go over in those hills and look for that stuff, and 99% of the time, I would go and I would be able to find at least one little piece somewhere. But it took persistence and it took dedication. Okay, so you're going to go on your rock hunting trip. You've got your place. You've got your gear. You want to find some areas for gas. You want to be careful if you're bringing children. You know, is there rattlesnakes in the area? You know, do they have gloves? Are they going to be flipping over rocks? How's the trail? Is there water that could be a hazard? All of these things need to be considered. How well can you walk? How far can you walk? How steep is it? What kind of plants are the hazards? So again, if you're a beginner, paid sites are great. If you're an expert and you haven't been to a particular site, paid sites are great. I've gone to several of them, done videos on doing tourmaline. I found kunzite, morganite, little tiny piece. All kinds of beautiful specimens can be found. Now, your rock hunting trip, your first one and your very first ones will be much more productive. Or if you're going to a new area that you haven't been before and you're somewhat experienced, go with a group. You will have more success because you have experienced persons that are going to give you tips. They're going to help you sort out what, like one time we were looking for stromatolites. We were at the Colorado River. There's these big gravel banks. They almost look like hills. And trying to think what that place was called, but there's these big gravel banks. They're full of cobblestones, and you look through them, and apparently glaciers or floods, I think floods, moved everything from agate all the way back up. Some of the jade, they said, could come from Wyoming or British Columbia or something like that. I don't remember, but you could find actual jade there. You could find agate there. And these stromatolite fossils, they're basically a plant that lives in the water and kind of comes up right to the surface. And it was, according to science, it was the first plant that could breathe air, according to science. Of course, they're just speculating, but it's kind of cool. Kind of hard to tell what it is, but once somebody says, that's it, you got it, now you've got an eye for it. If you're looking for crinoids, that can be hard. Sometimes some pieces are very definitive and you're like, oh yeah, I got something. Other times you kind of look at it going, well, is that? And then once you see it, you can't unsee it. You're like, okay, I got it, right? Just like if you're in an area where there's a lot of agate or jasper and there's a lot of, we call them broken arrowheads, where they've tried to make arrowheads. Once you figure out that's not just a broken rock that just happened to break that way, that's actually somebody was making an arrow, they messed up, they threw it down, they started on another one, you start going, now I know what an arrowhead looks like. So these people help you by going, that's it right there. Yes, that's it. That helps so much. It's just amazing. So when you're finding new specimens or new materials, I was pretty good at finding agate and things like that. But these stromatolites, that was a whole nother ballgame. Now I can find them all day long. Okay. So make sure you have some guidance if you can. And you can combine this hobby because it's like hiking. You're already hiking. It's like you can be like camping. If you stay the night, you can camp. And it's great when you have other like-minded people camping in the same area. Very fun to tell stories, talk about rocks and minerals and, you know, things. And when you're in the desert and the stars are so beautiful at night and you're out there eating a meal cooked over a fire or over a stove, very, very enjoyable. Your family will remember it forever. A lot of older people, but really good people. I've enjoyed being with those older people since I was in my 30s. Wouldn't give it up for the world. So more rock hounding equipment. We've talked about a lot of it, but as you get experienced, you may want different types of hammers, a selection of chisels, things like that. Safety equipment is key. You might want some Band-Aids, something to stop bleeding, maybe some medicine, you know, first aid kit with general first aid kit and things like that. Most important, eye protection, work gloves, footwear, something solid, no open shoes, that's stupid. A good first aid kit, a hard hat if you're going to be anywhere where rocks can fall on you. I would just say caves and stuff. People die in caves. So do not go in a cave unless you are very experienced and have been mining for a long time. It's still very dangerous. Those type of people get killed and hurt all the time. So not recommended. Tools for gathering your specimens. Again, you can pick these up at rock shops. You can buy them on eBay. Pick, hammer, pry bar. Those are good. Hand tools, little shovel like in the garden. There's also a little hand, it looks like an axe, but it's sideways, like a little digging tool where you dig things out. Broom or paintbrush can work good. Spray bottle, you got to have a spray bottle. Spray bottle will help you identify rocks. So many times you get a little wet, you look at it, and you can see, oh, it's an agate. Or, oh, it looks like it'll take a polish. I think I'll carry this thing around the next 10 miles, right? Sledgehammer is also important if you're going to be getting in some hard rocks. A lot of great agate, seam agate. You got to bust it out with a sledgehammer and a chisel. It takes a lot of time. It may be good to watch somebody more experienced do that and take turns with a hammer and chisel so that one person doesn't get too tired. Okay? So, yeah, you definitely want a very, very hard chisel. And children should be very careful around chisels too, because if you just wear glasses, the chips can go up underneath your glasses. So you really need a goggle that almost seals to your head, or has a padding that is going to keep chips from going up under your glasses, because those rocks can chip like glass. And believe me, glass in your eye is not good. Okay. Pry bar, mason hammer, sledgehammer, something like that. Small foldable shovel to a big shovel. 5-gallon buckets are a must. And I also use some bags. You can use pillowcases, or I have an old army bag that I've used forever. I do line it with pillowcases now because the rocks kind of chew up the bag. So that's a great idea. A backpack can be good. Material to wrap up your specimens, especially if you have brittle specimens. You may want to, if they're smaller, you can use like an egg carton and then wrap them up in paper towels or something like that and put them in there. Or if you're planning on bigger specimens, if they're fragile, you can put them in other types of containers, small boxes, things like this, and wrapping material. It just depends on what you're looking for, okay? You want to identify this material, so, you know, be sure and bring some glasses. If you wear glass-type glass, remember, if you're chipping the rock, it will bust right through your glasses, okay? So magnifying glass or a loop. Some loops will attach to your glasses. I like the kind you just keep in your pocket, of various type. 10 times power is pretty good. They have magnifying ones that pop open. They have a little light. You can see small flakes of gold in ore samples sometimes. They can be quite useful. Or you can look at small crystals. Those are good. Field guides, again, got to have a field guide. Rocks and mineral field guide. Identification. If you can find something local from the museum that talks about how to identify local ones, that's real good too. Navigation is important. If you get out of eyesight of your camp or off a road, if you start going in ravines and such, you know, check your phone connection. You can use GeoEarth. You can use a GPS device. If you know how to use a compass, I've done some videos on compass as well. Topographical maps and other maps are good. Guidebooks can give you basic location. For starters, don't go too far from your vehicle. Don't go too far from camp. It's better to go in a group. You go in a group, they know where to park, they know where to walk, they know how to get you back. So those are all good things, okay? Other items that could be good, depending on the weather, because you're going to be doing some hiking, extra shoes, extra clothes, whistle. If you're in a bear area, bear spray. If you're in a snake area, you might want to get some sort of a snake kit or a bee sting kit or a wasp sting kit. Get a good hat. Protect your neck. Flashlight's always good. I always carry a flashlight with me because you never know what you'll find. I've ran into caves where I'll just look around the edges. You know, I don't want to go inside, but look around the edge a little bit. Food, water. If you're hiking, even if you're only going to go for an hour, bring some food. Bring more than enough water. Hand sanitizer is good. You can roll up some toilet paper in a little wad to bring with you if you're going out on a hike in case you have an emergency. You got a little toilet paper there. Make sure you got something to dig with. Bury it underground. Garbage bag for your campsite, no doubt. Your little notebook and pen or pencil. I always use a pencil. Camera, those are on your phone now, so that's not too hard. Extra clothes and whistle. You get pretty dirty and dusty out there. Extra clothes and shoes, whistle, and rain gear. Rain gear can just be a plastic. If it's not going to rain, I always keep just a plastic poncho. They're very cheap. They're only a couple dollars. You can buy those on eBay. It's kind of a survivalist type thing. Emergency blanket, also just a piece of plastic with aluminum that puts your body heat back into you. You never know what could happen. You could break a leg, sprain an ankle, not make it out of there. Your buddy might have to hike back out of there. If you have a buddy, I wouldn't hike alone unless you're very, very experienced, very familiar with the area. it's probably very unadvisable. All right, so now some tips for your adventure. A few more. Again, make your notes. You may not find it the first time. I was looking for Road Night up in Wrightwood. It took me, I don't know, 4 trips. I think I found a little bit on my 3rd trip. Well, 1 little tiny piece. My 4th trip, I finally found a good amount. So it doesn't always happen the first time. Good things come to those who don't give up. Specimens, again, bring your specimens back. Make notes. If you have landmarks, write down the landmarks. If you can get a GPS coordinates, do that. If it was a half hour hike from the parking spot, write that. Write whatever you can, okay? Some of the areas where you can go to look for rocks, you know, there might be a collecting area where you see people have dug. You can look around that. You can look above it. You can look in the bottom of a cliff below it, around the edges. Stream beds are good. Dry, just watch out for flash floods. Rivers around the edges. Road cuts are a great place. If you see a new road cut, go over there and take a look. See if there's something there. Especially if it's an area where there's a lot of mineralization that's already known to be in existence. Okay, so there's a lot of ways to make your trip fun. Stops along the road are fun. Minerals such as crystal quartz are not always easy to find, but there might be a vein in the area. And if you thump around and you hear a hollow spot, that could be a vug when you're digging in the side of a hill. So crack it open, look and see what's happening. So you can tap around the rocks and you hear a stink, tink, thump. That could be a spot worth digging, okay? If you want to find some really neat, valuable rocks, you got to keep in mind not only your safety, but time management. I always think about that when I leave, how long it's going to take, the gassing time, the putting the tent up, have a full day of collecting, maybe I can collect a little bit more in the morning, and then get on my way, you know, or whatever your time schedule is. If you're going to several different locations, again, make sure to make your notes. If you're getting tired and it's getting hot, or you've collected a lot, it's probably better to make several small trips as opposed to one large trip. You can get exhausted in the heat very quickly, and you can drink a lot more water than usual. So don't kill yourself dragging out your specimens. That's not a good thing. Some of the kind of etiquette or rules for rock hounding is don't go where you can't enter, and don't go where you can't collect. I've talked a lot about looking around those areas for areas where you might be able to look, downstream of it, other geology that looks like it in an open area, around roads that are in the area, culverts, things like that, that are more of a public area, a public street. Those are areas that you could get away with walking around and doing some light, casual collecting off the surface. You're not going to be able to dig a 10-foot hole there, but you know, certainly you could walk along a road cut, and as long as you don't cause an avalanche, you could chip a little corner off a rock and take a look at it, in most cases. Okay, be conscientious of the land you're on. People have been shot for being on land that's not theirs, especially here in Idaho. So don't do that. Don't get arrested. Don't get hauled off someone's property. The Bureau of Land Management, also known as the BLM, they have guidelines to the amount of rocks you can collect. Usually it's so many pounds per day per person up to so many days. And if you have a couple people in your group, it can add up to be quite a few pounds of rocks and minerals that are allowed to be collected in most situations. If you dig a big hole, throw some of the loose rocks around back in it. Don't just leave a big hole open, especially in heavily collected areas. I know that's hard to do because there's already big holes there, but just try to neaten up the area the best you can. Pick up some trash, something like that. All right. So, let's see. We are just about ready to conclude. Well, actually, I got a little bit more here. Let me see. We talked a little bit about rock hounding rules. We talked about etiquette a little bit. And, yeah, being loud and obnoxious and shooting beer cans and things like that where other people are using the same land, riding motorcycles or hiking and camping, puts a really bad name on rock hounds. So, you know, be aware of your behaviors when you are there. You're representing the rock hounding community. Clean up your area, but also clean up your finds. If you get back to camp, you can take a little time to clean your finds, identify them a little bit better. You get back to the shop, you can sand and clean and scrub them even better, identify them better, keep a notebook. This will help you understand what's in your collection without having to pull everything out by keeping a ledger from your notes. And you can forget a lot about a specimen years later when you bring it out and you're trying to remember where that was. You have notes, that's great. If you've ever owned a mining claim, you know how important notes are. You will take a lot of notes because you really notice the details when you have a mining claim. All right, rock hounds may want to display or highlight some of their collection because it's much more enjoyable if you can have some of it out where you can see it. If you have a very impressive specimen, you don't want to hide it away. You want people to be able to see it. You know, I would just say hopefully you have a high caliber of friends and family that would not take those. I have had potentially a family member take some little gold nuggets that I had in a little tray on my one of the wood shelves in my living room. So gold makes people do weird things, but just kind of a word to the wise. Keep your collection protected from dust or light. And also, you may want lighting on your display. So be aware of what is good for your mineral, what's bad for your mineral. In our podcast and videos, we talk a lot about which minerals are light sensitive, which ones are water sensitive, and so on and so forth. So really, there's a lot to learn about rock hounding. We could talk more about it, and we'll go into some of the other details in future episodes. I am going to have a main subject for each episode. If you could email me at radicalrocksusa@gmail.com. Let me know what you think of this format. Do you like it? Do you love it? Do you want to see something different? And since today's episode was especially long, I will not be doing the variety of information at the end. And June is just a really busy month for me, so I would like to make another episode just to keep you up to date what's happening in the rock, mineral, and fossil world, but time is just not allowing for that this week. We have a lot of birthdays in my family this month. So in the meantime, get familiar with these techniques, and rock hounding is a very rewarding hobby that you can start now before you retire. You don't have to wait until you retire to start this hobby. I've seen a lot of people wait till they retire. Do not wait until you retire. Start now, even if you can only go on one trip a year, even if you can only go to a real rock club's gym and mineral show once a year. Go now. Start finding out what you like. Start finding out what's out there, because there's more than one lifetime to spend in the rewarding hobby of rock hounding and of lapidary. And the enjoyment will bring you hours of happiness, and you'll meet new friends. And yeah, it's just really something. So with that, I'm going to conclude this episode. I want to thank you all for tuning in. Until next time, remember, rock hounds don't die, they petrify.